kitchen. There's hard to be raining her do.
Come over here, kid, where's up? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Thanks for tuning in. February 1st? My, February 1st. I drove quite a lot yesterday and noticed, out on Slusser Road going past Sarah Lee's, Richards Grove and Sarah Lee's Vineyard and Russian Hill Winery. There, I noticed a lot of flowering trees. And then today, my little weather widget said it was 74 degrees in Sebastopol. I ate the season's first artichokes today. And I thought, yeah, it's a drought year. You know, it happens. We live in a region that has always, as long as we have any records, it's a cycle of drought and flood and drought and flood. The last two droughts have both been 7 years. I think we're in the third year of a drought now. So we may not have any or substantial amount of rainfall for another 4 years. So here's my advice. Wash your car. Polish it up. Get all the little specks of mud out of the inside. And then either pack away or give away all your raincoats and your umbrellas. That's the best thing you can do towards getting this rain. If you buy a new raincoat or an umbrella, you're going to curse us. It's always worked for me. I bought a new raincoat, and I don't think it rained for 6 years after that until the coat was totally out of fashion. Anyway, I've lived here for both of the seven-year droughts, and, oh, it's nice the first year or so because I think, oh, it's so pretty, but we need water. Water is a good thing. On that note, we're going on a road trip all the way across the country to the Atlantic seaboard. And I confess a lot of ignorance on this subject, and including when I think of wine from the East, I immediately think of New York, upstate New York. And I know that the wine region, and I've heard from certain people who've toured wineries, I think in Virginia, in Georgia, you know, there's actually wine made in all 50 states of the United States. So we are going to explore the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. We have here in the studio with us some gentlemen. Welcome to Sonoma County. We have Carl Bradhorst. Did I get that right?
Yes, you did.
You are the current president.
I'm the current president. Thank you very much.
We have Dave Barber. You are the first vice president.
That's correct.
And then we have also joining us, and you get to spend a couple of weeks here, Gordon Murchie, who is president emeritus.
Always a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's really nice to welcome you to another wine region.
Thank you.
So, the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, what are your geographic boundaries?
Our geographic boundaries, Michelle, are from Maine to Florida. We originally started back in 1973 as the Vinifer Wine Growers Association, and while we had a national kind of mandate as a trade organization, we kind of concentrated on Virginia at that time. But Virginia now has kind of blossomed as far as the number of wineries we have and the quality of wine. And about 5 years ago, we recognized the quality and quantity of wine on the East Coast and thought that we needed to change our focus from a kind of state one to more regional. So we started the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Competition, and we're in our fifth year now.
Oh, great. Now, how many wineries in Virginia?
Oh, we have over 150 wineries.
Really?
And we are the fifth largest wine producing state in the Union.
Okay, fifth. Don't tell me. Let me.
Okay.
California,
mm-hmm.
Oregon, California, Washington,
mm-hmm.
Oregon.
Yes. Well,
no.
Actually,
no.
They
Idaho.
Down. No. Go east again.
Okay. Not Ohio.
Further east.
No. Further east.
New York.
Yes.
New York. Okay. So it's we're going to start again. California, Washington, Oregon, New York.
No, wait. Third one is New York.
New York. New York and
third
then Oregon.
One is New York. Mm-hmm. Then Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Then Virginia.
And then Virginia. Wow. Yeah. Interesting.
New York used to be number two,
uh-huh.
but then they plant a lot more vines in Washington State in the desert east of the Cascades, and they just took over.
Mm-hmm.
So they became the second largest, and New York slipped to number three.
Mm-hmm. It's so easy if you live here to be geographic centric, mm-hmm. not for any reason, not out of, you know, chauvinism,
right?
Because there's a lot to do.
Mm-hmm. You know? Oh, absolutely.
There's a lot right here and just getting mm-hmm. to know it. So you must have a lot of variation. You have a lot of variation in climate if you go all the way from a tropical region
right.
Up really north where you can see the northern lights.
Mm-hmm. Well, not quite that far. Maine.
You can't see the northern lights in Maine?
I don't
northern
think
Maine?
I don't think so.
Oh, I thought you could. Well, scratch that off my itinerary.
Okay.
Do you have a similar variation in varietals?
Yes, we have a
Let's talk a little. I bet you grow a lot of stuff California doesn't know about.
That's
that
true.
Correct.
Yeah.
We're fighting
each other. We do a lot of, in fact, the first wine, Leif Erikson found a lot of grapes growing when he traveled around in the 1000s or whatever, and it was called Vineland. But when the English settlers came over looking for grapes to make wine to send back to the mother country, they found that they could grow some native grapes, make some native grapes there, make some wine, but it didn't taste quite like the wines they were growing and tasting from Europe. So they kept trying to do some other things to make better wines and bring vinifera grapes from Europe and making wine, but it still wasn't that great, and so hybridization started, natural hybridization or even the forced hybridization
mm-hmm.
of crossbreeding.
Mm-hmm. So crossbreeding with native North American
Native
grapes?
American grapes are very hardy.
Uh-huh.
Vinifera are not quite as hardy. So they don't last that well in the winters.
Mm-hmm.
But they tried growing them separately, but unbeknownst to them in the 1600s, 1700s, we had this little bug in the soil called phylloxera.
Yes.
And you all know about here in California, but it really was there. So the vinifera they planted lasted the first 2 years, came up nicely, but then sort of faded away.
Mm-hmm.
And they tried doing that, but there's enough vinifera pollen around that sort of naturally crossbred with some of the native grapes. And some people who still wanted to grow grapes found some of these seedlings and developed some of the hybrids. But then later on in the centuries, specific hybridizations work started.
Mm-hmm. Now, you hear a lot, say, about California and how things almost died off
mm-hmm.
during Prohibition. What yes. happened on the East? What was happening on the East Coast?
Well, it wasn't almost. It did die.
It did die, okay.
But in some areas. There were some areas that continued. But Prohibition didn't start in the 1900s, as out here. It blossomed earlier, the Bible Belt and everything else. So Prohibition started on a local basis until it got to the national swing. And then, of course, prior to that, too, we had the Civil War, which fought a lot of battles in the fields, and that's where we grew the grapes. But prior to that, Virginia especially, and Maryland and Pennsylvania had some thriving wine industries.
So it's really those triple blows. Let's see, would that be triple blows?
Mm-hmm.
Civil War,
yep.
Early pre-prohibition, mm-hmm. Prohibition. Wow,
yeah.
that's really interesting.
Revolutionary War, because all of our founding fathers were involved in trying to create a wine industry on the East Coast. And, of course, prior to the Revolutionary War, their endeavors came to a halt as they left to join the American forces and political movement for the revolution. So we would start with the Revolutionary War and then, as Dave says, into the Civil War and so on and so forth.
So does any of that wine from back then, has any of it been found, preserved anywhere? Do we know much about like its chemical footprint or its flavors, that sort of thing?
Some of the grapes are still around
okay.
because, remember, Prohibition did not allow the consumption of wine, but there were special dispensations you get for making wine for medicinal purposes and also sacramental purposes.
Right.
So there was wine preserved.
And you could make wine for yourself.
Yes. But there was the law there. California said the concentrated grapes out here were the things, do not add water, do not add yeast, do not do this, because you'll have something that's illegal.
Yeah. Right. Interesting. Well, we're going to take a little musical break here and be right back with more talk about the wine industry and the Atlantic seaboard.
Red, red wine, go to my head, make me forget that I still need a soul. Red, red wine, it's up to you. All I can do, I've done, but memories won't go. No, memories won't go. I'd have sworn that with time, thoughts of you would leave my...
You're listening to Mouthful here on KRCB, and right now I'm saying yes to our really interesting grapes. I'm fascinated. Pre-Revolutionary War viticulture in North America. I love it. So let's... I have this really great idea. You want to pour something?
We can certainly do that.
We can sip while we're talking. So you have these wines back there. I see a burgundy bottle. I see a... I don't even know what you call this bottle. I think of it as a Gewurz bottle, but...
It's a Germanic.
Okay, Germanic.
With a new twist to it.
With a new twist. I see a Bordeaux bottle. I see two Bordeaux bottles. So what would you like to pour first?
Well, let's pour the first one here, Michelle. This is from the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Competition, our best of... show, which is a Riesling from Newport Winery in Rhode Island.
A Newport, Rhode Island.
Right. Let me.
Okay, you go ahead and let's hear this lovely sound. There you go, and it's a Riesling.
It's a Riesling from Newport Winery in Newport, Rhode Island.
My daughter's She went there a few times.
It's a very small winery up there. But they do make some great grapes. There's other wineries in the state of Rhode Island, like Saconic, which also does Riesling, and Vidal, which is a French hybrid. And these wines were all entered in our competition this year.
And this got best of?
Best of show.
Best of show.
Right.
Excellent.
We had about 100 wineries from 12 states, and we had about 458 wines. It's very small compared to your competitions out here, but we've been growing every year in the 5 years that we've been doing it.
So who wants to talk about this wine?
Well, okay, I will. It's a Riesling. We all know what Rieslings are. Riesling is a Germanic base, but it's also cold hardy. That's why in the Northeast it can grow a little better. You get a lot of nice, pleasant aromas coming through. You get the peaches and apricots, typical of the Riesling. A lot of florals. And tasting it, it's finished in the off-dry.
It's
barely sweet.
Uh-huh.
But again, that balances, because Rieslings is a Germanic style. Usually a lot of acids in there. So a little sweetness just balances things out. So it's a very pleasant, very full mouth feel.
Yeah, very, very pleasant, very pretty, not overwhelming.
Yeah.
And that sweetness is very forward. It doesn't, cloy
it's not
on
cloying.
Back. Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And it just lingers nicely, and it's a nice match with lots of different foods, too.
What would you all like with it? How do you enjoy it?
Light seafood or chicken, but even with a little spiciness in there, a touch of curry or something like that.
Thai food.
A little sweetness will go.
Thai food. Okay, yeah, I can see that working. Coconut milk-based curry. But one of the things I always like to look at, and I think is interesting, you look at the indigenous foods or food traditions of a region. And so, let's see. Rhode Island, what would we be thinking
about? Well, it's almost lobster area.
Yes.
Almost lobster.
But all your seafood. You have
and
your
certainly
clams.
Right there in clam chowder area.
That's correct, yes.
And a lot of fresh vegetables grown there, so you can put a lot of that together, too. But it's just a pleasant wine, almost what you ever have in your pantry or your farmer's market, put together and enjoy it.
And the Riesling was one of the first vinifera white wines that grew on the East Coast. In New York, Dr. Constantine Frank was one of the people that promoted it. And that winery is still producing some of the top Rieslings. Even for Virginia, one of the first white viniferas we had was a Riesling.
Okay, well, really, it's really lovely.
All the floral flavors coming through, the aromas are definitely there, and just follow through in the mouthfeel.
Yeah, it's really, really quite quite nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to try something that I've never heard of before next.
Okay.
Let's
give our second wine here, the one you said was in the Burgundy bottle. This is from a small winery in New Jersey, Alba Vineyards. This is a Chambersin, which is a hybrid.
Chambersin is a French hybrid grape. The French were trying to hybridize some of the grapes by taking the vinifera and crossbreeding it with Native American grapes because they get the flavors from the vinifera, but the hardiness, the sturdiness of the vine from the Native American. And actually, this wine was hybridized in France, in the Loire Valley, by a Frenchman because they had the Native American grapes there because they were planting the rootstock to get away from the phylloxera and developing things. And it was actually planted in a lot in the Loire Valley and also came to the east and planted a lot on the East Coast. But it's a Chambersin grape, the French hybrid.
Okay. You'll find a lot of Chambersin grown in Pennsylvania, in addition to New Jersey, and some in Virginia.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's
you get a little smokiness, a little tarriness.
But also you get it over this bed of very silky, satiny.
Yes.
There's not that. I was expecting more of a foundation of rougher tannins, partly when you say, you know, a really hearty grape, hearty red. You think thick skins, you know, indestructible seeds and all that relates.
Sometimes with Chambersin you get kind of a graininess, but this is Alba Vineyards is very smooth.
Very smooth.
Yeah, and Chambersin is a great grape. It's on the East Coast because it's very versatile, too.
Mm-hmm.
You can make a dry rosé or even a sweeter rosé or a blush. Unoaked Chambersin give you the fruitier Beaujolais style, or even oak it to give you a little
I can imagine that nice Beaujolais style out of this. But yeah,
is.
That smokiness is very pretty.
Yes. A little more complexity to it.
Yeah, really nice.
We have a number of the French hybrid varietals on the East Coast, which is totally different. You do not have them on the West Coast. We understand there's a few brave vintners out here that are trying some of the French hybrids.
Would you name some of them?
Well, the Chambersin, of course, you've just tasted. We have the Marshall Fos. We have the Vidal and the Saval. Those are all classic wines that are now being produced in quantity commercially on the East Coast. And again, you don't find those out here, just like the Native American grapes, and you'll be tasting a varietal of that too. But those are the dominant ones. We've started from 1600 with Native American grapes. It wasn't until the 1930s did we get to the French hybrids. That became the dominant grape on the East Coast. And later in the 1950s is when we got into the world-class vinifera grapes.
Now, one of the things that's happening and has been happening for a while now in California is that vineyards have been taking over, especially vineyards in Sonoma County and Napa County, have been taking over other agricultural regions. How is viticulture growing on the eastern seaboard? Is there enough open space? Are you converting? What's happening?
Well, we're getting more houses and commercialization there that's taking over some of the open spacing, as you probably are here too.
Yeah.
But there still is the area there.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the result is more of the vineyards are planted further out, which makes it harder for
wine. Are they taking over other crops, or
are
they just open space?
We're replacing the tobacco crop.
Oh, tobacco.
We're trying to.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, interesting.
That was your dominant economic crop for so many years, and now with all of the health problems and so on, those are being pulled. And they're being most of those fields are other commercial crops, but the vineyards now, I think, are a dominant replacement.
That
you're finding
like
that in
idea.
Virginia and in Maryland. They have a
and
real
North Carolina.
Drive in Maryland to do that.
So the more southern.
Where tobacco was dominant.
Yeah, and tobacco didn't, it stops at some point. It doesn't go very far north.
Correct. Yeah, Maryland is about the furthest north.
Furthest
because
north.
It's the weather and the climate and the soils.
And then what about as you get up further north into New England and those areas, are there crops that grapes are replacing?
Not too much. It's more supplementing. There's
okay.
not too much replacement area.
Well, that's nice to know.
Although in Long Island,
that's
going to
be my next question.
They were growing all potatoes. Long Island was a truck farming and potatoes, but Alex and I forget her first name. Hargraves were the first ones that sort of bought up an old potato farm and stopped planting potatoes and planted grapes. And everyone else saw they were very successful in making nice wines. And now Long Island is a dominant grape producing area. And it's interesting there, the climate, because it is Long Island, it's bordered by the Atlantic Ocean and Long Island Sound, so it's two major bodies of water all around this strip of land. The climate is very Bordeaux style, so very similar to Bordeaux, France.
Mm-hmm.
And they're getting a lot of the vinifera growing that way.
Mm-hmm. Merlot is a large variety up there on the northern, northern and the southern neck on Long Island. And in fact, I think it was Osprey Dominion, one of the wineries that entered our competition, got best of show for their Reserve Merlot. I think
first two years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, hand in hand with this expansion of the industry, is there also an expansion of tourism connected to it?
And absolutely.
What tasting rooms are open to the?
Yes. Almost all the wineries do have a tasting room and selling tasting wines there and sales there.
Uh-huh.
And a few of them are starting to open restaurants in association with the wineries. Yes.
Oh, interesting.
We have Barbersville down in the Charlottesville area. They have the Palladium Restaurant, which is probably one of the first ones to tie in with the winery.
And a lot of Finger Lake wineries have always had restaurants associated with
them. Hear a lot about Finger Lakes. And we've had somebody on Mouthful. It was a number of years ago now, making wine in Niagara.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. That was really interesting.
The Niagara grape.
Yeah, and
it's a Native American grape.
Ice wine. Mm-hmm. They're talking about ice wine, what freezes in the field. Mm-hmm. And I guess that appellation has regulations. It has to be naturally frozen. You can't take the grapes and put them in your freezer.
Yeah. And they can do it in Niagara Peninsula on a regular basis as opposed to Germany, which maybe does it once every 10 years.
Uh-huh. Well, let's take another sip of this. And you have to tell me the varietal.
This is the Chambersin.
Chambersin. I'll have to hear it five or six times before I remember. Chambersin. And again, the
New Jersey.
New Jersey. That's right,
just
New Jersey.
A little bit north and east of Philadelphia, toward the northern part of the state.
New Jersey is growing with a lot of different wineries, too. I forget the numbers, but at least
really
60,
like
70 wineries.
This is nice really,
body.
Really lovely.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty.
Yes.
It's pretty. It's delicate.
And this would match up easily with your steaks or roasts.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it would go. This one might actually go really nicely with the fresh black chanterelles
I had earlier today.
They would be.
And you didn't bring any for us.
There weren't that many. Okay. They were just a little tiny bit.
We'll let you go.
I selfishly ate them all alone. I didn't even share them with my cats. You are listening to Mouthful on KRCB.
Well, when I was a young man and never been kissed, I got to thinking it over how much I had missed. So I got me a girl and I kissed her and then, oh Lordy, well, I kissed her again because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, I asked her to marry and be my sweet wife. I told her we'd be so happy for the rest of her life. I begged her and I pleaded like a natural man. And in whoops, oh Lordy, well, she gave me her hand because she had kisses sweeter than wine. She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Sweeter than wine.
Well, we worked very hard, both me and my wife, working hand in hand.
If you would like to follow along with the website, while we're talking here with the gentleman from the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, you can go to VWGA. Did I get that right? VWGA.org. And lots of information there about this really interesting wine region. I'm absolutely fascinated. So we've done Virginia. We've tasted Rhode Island, and we've tasted New Jersey.
We'd like to taste a Virginia one now.
Okay.
And we talked about the French hybrids and Native Americans, but we're also good with some nice vinifera. The one we're going to pour now is from Barbersville Winery in Virginia, and happens to be the proprietary name is Octagon. Now, the Barbersville Winery is owned by the Italian company, Zonin, that were in the late 1960s, early 1970s, were looking to expand in the U.S. And they traveled around, and they came across central Virginia, and it reminded him of Italy, his hometown in Italy. Mm-hmm. Bought a lot of land, planted the vineyards, and the rest we have as their wine. Brought over an Italian winemaker, Luca Pescina.
Mm-hmm. One of our best winemakers in Virginia.
Mm-hmm. And so what actually is the grape?
The grape is a blend.
Okay.
It's a Bordeaux-style
it's a
blend.
Bordeaux style.
You mean it's a hybrid or it's
no,
several
vinifera,
grapes?
Vinifera.
It's vinifera, just like a Bordeaux blend.
Predominantly Merlot. A little bit of Cabernet Franc, a little bit of Merlot, a splash of Petit Verdot blended in there.
Oh, okay.
One of the interesting things about this particular wine that you're looking at is that it was just served by President Obama in the White House to the former presidents of Bill Carter and Bush. This particular wine was just served at the White House.
Yeah, I read something where, I don't know if it was the dinner or lunch the day of the inauguration. Somebody said, why were only California wines served? Mm-hmm. Something like that. It's like, God, it was one meal.
That's correct. Yeah. We're working to get more back in there from other than California. We have to figure equal time.
Well, it seems like it's not even been 2 weeks yet, and this one's there. So
exactly.
That seems pretty
good. It's also interesting. It's named Octagon because of the crest of the building that was the original building of Governor Barber. It was designed by Thomas Jefferson.
Oh.
Who also did the same design for the University of Virginia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Governor Barber and Thomas Jefferson were contemporaries and good friends, and it's in the Charlottesville area. So that is the blueprint on there. And the octagon, the dining room area, was in the shape of an octagon, and the ruins of the house are still on the property that the Zonins purchased. So looking for a proprietary name, they chose Octagon. Mm-hmm.
So when you start talking about wine history and viticultural history, you can go back really far in your area.
1609 is
about
when it
started. Yeah, that's amazing. Because, I mean, here in California, there's a lot talked about, and we go back, if we're really, really conscientious, I think we go back to about, 1821? We go up back to this plantings west of Grayton.
The late 1700s when your fathers came up from Mexico and started the Mission Grape.
Well, we've got a couple of patches left from Russian settlers.
Yeah.
They think that these two patches out off Green Hill Road in Sebastopol were planted by Russians, but there's not much left and there's very little record, but they supposedly beat the Spaniards by a few years.
But again, the chronological history or the recorded history is lacking, and that's why we're not sure.
Exactly. It's lacking.
But we do have documents that show that Captain John Smith made 20 gallons of wine somewhere shortly after they arrived on the 13th of May in 1607. So somewhere before he left in 1610 and then printed the documents, his observations in London in 1611. So we know that wine was made very early on in Jamestown. And it happened all the way up through the period of Jamestown to Williamsburg when it became the capital in 1699. So basically when they hear Virginia first in wine, it's because there was a sustained effort to develop a wine industry from the period of 1600 on up.
Now, if memory's serving me well, the first American viticultural area or appellation that was established in contemporary wine terms. Wasn't that in Missouri?
There are a few in Missouri, but I'm not sure whether it's the first one.
I think it was that, maybe Lawrence can find that online, the first American viticultural area.
AVA.
Yeah, I sort of remember.
Because Missouri was a major wine producing area, too, prior to the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And sent a lot of wine and grapes all over the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think they were the first one. I always found, again, being, California.
Augusta, okay. Hmm?
Augusta, Missouri. Kainoa got it. Okay, I guess the first American viticultural area, Augusta, Missouri, and it was established. Do we see the year it was established? It seems like it was 1983. Is that right? That seems so late.
It wouldn't.
1980. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and do you have you begun? Where has the Eastern Seaboard established a number of viticulture areas?
We do. And within Virginia, there are 7 AVAs.
Mm-hmm.
The other states I have some, but I'm not sure exactly how many. But they are working on it. I know North Carolina, I believe, has 2 currently now.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, petitioning the TTB to get these in, it's a long and hard arduous
it
task.
It is a long process.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's it's Octagon. Mm-hmm. It's 2005. It's from Virginia. Let me take another little sip here.
And this is Barbersville. This is the winery that has the Palladium Restaurant associated with it.
Mm-hmm. Again, it doesn't have big, rough tannins.
No.
It's very refined and elegant.
Mm-hmm. It's mellowed nicely. And again, it's a Bordeaux style, but more of a Pomerol style because it's predominantly Merlot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, not in your face.
Nope.
Fruit bomb, nothing like that. That's really quite nice. Who's drinking these wines?
Anyone who can buy them.
Do you find much of a movement into the industry, say the food and wine industry, into restaurants, that sort of thing? Or can you tell if it's more retail?
You'll, Barbersville is one of the large wineries mm-hmm. in Virginia, and you will find that in restaurants in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area.
Mm-hmm. But many of your East Coast wineries are smaller, mm-hmm. and they sell obviously directly from their tasting rooms and limited distribution around there mm-hmm. because we just don't have enough wine, the individual ones, and we're still growing. And uh-huh. if we get more grapes, we can make more wine, and more people will enjoy it. But uh-huh. there is a recognition there, and people from other states are starting to look for the wines, too.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, too, wine direct shippings. The states allow direct shippings.
Right.
A lot of the wineries do direct ship.
Uh-huh.
I know we have sent – I have a small winery in Virginia, and we on a regular basis do ship wine out to California for the individuals, uh-huh. and to Florida and Missouri and uh-huh. New York.
And, Dave, what's the name of your winery?
It's Heartwood Winery.
Heartwood, and did you bring anything?
No, we didn't at this time.
Oh, you didn't? Okay.
We were just doing for the winners of our competition.
Oh, for the winners of the competition. Mm-hmm. Is that what brought you to Sonoma County?
Well, that and our mission to support the industry and expose the Atlantic Seaboard. And we were at the Unified Symposium in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And we did a tasting of Atlantic Seaboard wines there within the symposium. And then we have done a reception the other night with some local retailers and Santa Rosa Junior College, session there. So we're trying to at least make an awareness that the East does make wine, has a long history of making wine,
mm-hmm.
maybe different grapes than everyone in California is used to, but at least they're interesting wines, interesting grapes, and make some nice wines.
Mm-hmm.
The quality level is up, and that's why we Atlantic Seaboard Wine mm-hmm. Competition.
Yeah, I'm really pleased, dazzled. Mm-hmm. I'm really impressed with the quality. I've gone wine tasting outside of the West Coast, mm-hmm. I mean in North America, just one time. And it probably isn't something that furthered my good impression of Ohio wines.
Yes.
they seem to have a very strong preference for very high residual sugar.
Yes. Well, again, a lot of the smaller wineries mm-hmm. make the wine what's going to sell to the local market.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, as we're starting drinking wine, no matter where they are, start drinking sweet until they eventually dry out.
Yeah. Yeah, and this was in a very small town. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, oh, what a novelty, Ohio. Let's go see.
Well, Ohio has over 100 wineries now.
Yeah.
And where a lot of those, like Pennsylvania, Ohio, started with fruit wines, then they mm-hmm. moved to the grape wine. So mm-hmm. the residual question of high sugar was still there.
Yeah, and this was, this must be 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yes.
So there may be changes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we have the competition, Michelle, to kind of highlight the quality of the wines that are being produced, certainly on mm-hmm. the East Coast. And a lot of people don't think Georgia produces wine, but Frogtown Cellars down in Georgia produce really nice wines down
there. Tell us about Georgia wines.
They're grown usually in the northern part of the state, kind of on the North Carolina border. We get about 2 or 3 wineries submit for our competition. Mm-hmm. One that stands out in my mind right now is Frogtown Cellars. And they have a very nice wine called Touche, which is on a Bordeaux blend, kind of like the one mm-hmm. we just tasted at Octagon with Barbersville. And you've got the North Carolina wineries that are just growing as much as they are in Virginia, in mm-hmm. the western part of the state.
And now, it's down in that region, are a lot of them specializing in the more Bordeaux?
Well, both. Stuff? Both okay. those and the hybrids.
Okay.
You know, the Sauvignon Blanc, the Vidal Blanc. Uh-huh. You're getting some of the Chambersand down there also.
Okay. So let's try something more.
But then that's a good segue in there, too, because the next one we have is a Scuppernong from North Carolina,
Scuppernong?
Which is a Native American grape.
Oh.
It's Vitis rotundifolia, as opposed to the Vitis vinifera, indigenous to the U.S., and you get the large grape leaves. That's why it's called Vitis rotundifolia. And instead of big bunches of grapes, you get more or less individual large berries on the fruit.
Really?
But this is the Scuppernong, the muscadine.
It's one of the muscadine family.
Uh-huh.
And actually, we feel this is one of the wines that was made in the 1600s. Once they got out of the Jamestown swamp area, they discovered the muscadine, and this may have well been that grape.
Mm-hmm.
You'll find it on the sweet side.
Okay.
Yeah, this Vitis rotundifolia, being the Scuppernong, has a little different flavor profile. And to cover that up, especially also with some of the native Labruscas, Concord or Niagara,
mm-hmm.
people don't like the flavors there. So putting a little sweetness in there seems to mellow it out a little bit and make it a more palatable type of wine. So this is a Scuppernong. People say it's a muscadine. They say it's similar to Muscat, but it's not. It's unique to itself.
That is some bouquet.
Yes.
Some
yes.
bouquet.
Very aromatic.
I don't know if I have the words to describe it quite yet. I may have to. Okay, now that, I don't know if something just blew off, but there was something decidedly not grapey, but now it's not there anymore.
this grape variety is grown basically in the southern part of the United States.
Lawrence, you want to say what you think?
You get a hint of orange peel, but then you also get that musky flavors, typical of
the Scuppernong. Yeah, there's some musky flavors, mm-hmm. but there's also something like very, very, very ripe mm-hmm. white peaches.
Yes.
But also, there's a, in there somewhere, too, is something just, that's a grape. It mm-hmm. smells like a grape.
It's the old thing, the Concord grape jelly, similar
yeah.
structure. Uh-huh. And this is just like going to the vineyard and pulling off a tendril and putting through your teeth, mm-hmm. and you're getting the grape flavors.
Yeah.
The structure of the variety.
And so tell us again what it's called.
This is, it's actually from Duplin Wine Cellars from North Carolina, and the variety is a Scuppernong.
Let me see the mm-hmm. light.
Sure.
I'm such a visual thinker.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they do some
like it sounds Scuppernong.
Mm-hmm. And they do some other Scuppernongs, there are other muscadines grapes. They do a Carlos and a Magnolia, which are names of grapes, other grapes also. And again, just the varietal are differences, but they're nice. And again, a little sweetness, mm-hmm. and people swear by them or hate them.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I don't hate it.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely don't hate it. And with the right thing alongside, that would be really enjoyable. And again, I'm thinking some sort of Asian.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Some sort of Asian curry.
Yeah, this is a nice example because, again, it's not cloyingly sweet.
Right.
Sometimes they will make them because that's what the uh-huh. people want, something that, you know, how sweet can you go? And uh-huh. that's what a lot of people go. But, again, with the unique flavors and balance rightly with the mm-hmm. sweetness, it makes a nice wine.
Yeah, and it still has plenty of acid. Again, it's not sweet like a dessert wine. It's not cloying
Correct.
On the palate.
Yes.
One of the things I'm curious about, and to someone from the West Coast, this is a very mm-hmm. odd thing that's hard to understand. Dry counties. Dry sides of the street, you know, that sort of thing. Does your association include any areas like that?
Yes.
And how does that influence
your
industry, or does it?
It's the limitation there.
Uh-huh.
You know, prohibition is not completely over mm-hmm. because when in 1933, when the national prohibition was over, all they did was let the states regulate what mm-hmm. should be done. Some of the states didn't want to do that, and even some local counties decided that we're going to remain dry, or we're going to be limiting the blue laws came through that you cannot mm-hmm. sell alcohol on Sundays, and
right.
some
and you
of
can't are, and what you can sell, I don't know if it varies county by county or city by city, but I know it's just in Mississippi,
mm-hmm.
and you can buy beer in a supermarket, but you can't buy wine.
That's exactly right, and that's your state law, because this second clause of the 21st Amendment was states, you regulate it, we federal government don't want to.
Yeah, and then also you have to dry. I know in Dallas. This happened, and this I don't mm-hmm. understand at all. One side of the street would be dry, and the other side wouldn't, and I don't know how that's divided up.
You cross the county line.
Yeah, county line in a case like that.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
But some states who regulate it, you know, as you said, of where you can purchase grapes or uh-huh. wine and beer uh-huh. and hard alcohol, uh-huh. some states are control states. For instance, Pennsylvania, all wine and hard alcohol is sold through the state stores.
Right.
Beer, yeah. you buy
and
through.
Never on Sunday at those state stores.
They've seen they're losing sales, so they're changing that a little bit.
Oh, okay.
But
you know,
not
when
all
the
of them.
21st Amendment yeah. came in and overturned the 18th Amendment ending prohibition, it mm-hmm. protected those dry counties or states as they it was up to them to mm-hmm. retain that. So it gave them the right under that amendment.
Uh-huh. Has there been because that's still there, and I assume some of those counties, you know, have substantial populations, mm-hmm. has there been resistance to the growing wine industry from those areas?
I don't think so, because okay. I think they still see the tourist dollars. And
okay.
they just regulate the sales, and they feel mm-hmm. that's all they can do. Mm-hmm.
And do they see, does everyone sort of see that, well, this is an agricultural industry, and that's a benefit?
Well, that's what we try and promote, that we are uh-huh. agriculture. And uh-huh. Actually, Virginia happens to be a very strong state in including our viticultural enological industry as part of the state's agricultural endeavors.
Okay.
In Virginia, we have a state viticulturist and a state enologist. So if you want to come and set up a winery, you know, there's a fellow there to help you. If you want to just plant grapes, there's another fellow who's done a analysis of the entire state and can give you some pointers as to where the uh-huh. best grapes grow.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like it's all really moved along towards, sophistication of understanding it and promoting it and supporting it
yes.
and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, we see in Virginia, you know, the wineries have gone out and set up operation, and then the B&Bs come right afterwards. So on a Friday afternoon around Washington, D.C., you'll see people head out to the wine country to hunt for B&B for Friday and Saturday night, visit the wine in some restaurant. So it really does add to the tourism.
Mm-hmm. You know, how has, we talked about food a little bit ago. Well, let's talk, we were in New England at that point, mm-hmm. but now we're down south a little bit. So how are the local wines and the really local cuisines interacting?
People are trying to match them all and do some
do you
as
see,
it
do you
comes
see,
through.
Do you have any examples of some success or anything becoming classic? Like, here, just as an example here, mm-hmm. we raise really good duck. We have a really good, thriving mushroom industry in parts of Sonoma County. Mm-hmm. And we're a really great place for Pinot Noir. You mm-hmm. see those three things work. Also, we have a goat cheese industry, which, again, goes really nicely with Pinot Noir. Do we have anything like I think, I don't know that much about the food of that area, right. but I think of pecan pie. I think yeah. of various kinds of barbecue. I think of crab.
Yeah, I think it's happening, but mm-hmm. on a smaller area since the wines aren't mm-hmm. widely distributed mm-hmm. and the local foods are so varied by the localities, mm-hmm. it's sort of they're getting little niches of what goes mm-hmm. well, and a winery will try and promote their wine with a certain local type of food, mm-hmm. but on a general statewide or even a more national trend, mm-hmm. I don't think it's really seen at this point, but I think it's working.
So there's some room for that.
Definitely.
Because it seems like, certainly in California, one of the things that happened earlier on was as people got more sophisticated, I think, with their wine drinking, and anybody, including Kainoa and Lawrence over mm-hmm. there, if you think I'm crazy, just jump in and tell me I'm wrong. But I think you saw a turn towards French cooking mm-hmm. and then towards also Italian and Spanish cuisine. We mm-hmm. turned to areas with long-established wines and foods that went with them yeah. rather than really seeing something more indigenous. We started seeing that. Certainly we see that now. Mm-hmm. But early on, we didn't. Yeah. So, and having eaten my way through as much of Mississippi as I could, and also New Orleans, I love food from that region. I really
yes.
love it.
I think a lot of wineries are trying to match their wines with mm-hmm. food. A lot of them are doing wine dinners, mm-hmm. you know, 5-6 courses with one of their wines mm-hmm. matched and opening
and
up.
And they are doing local foods when they do that.
They're doing some local or just uh-huh. some regular food, any type uh-huh. of a thing to make it a special deal. It's just so wine is versatile, can go yeah. with anything.
So anybody got an opinion on what you should drink with Maryland crab cakes?
I would say a Riesling or something with a, okay. just a slight, you know, a lot of fruitiness and, uh-huh. and even a, or a Vidal Blanc. A Vidal or Blanc being a French hybrid or Sauval Blanc.
Sauval Blanc?
Sauval Blanc. You know, the drier whites we mm-hmm. have.
Okay, so what else do we have to try? We have just one, right?
Well, we just have one, and this is not one of the Virginia wines. We'll let Gordon talk about this. It's tied into the history aspect
I
of it.
I think I recognize it.
Probably.
Blendus so, Rainwater Madeira. Right, that is one of my favorite things in the world. And I okay. had no idea it would be connected with you all
well, we'll
in any
way. We'll let Gordon talk about
that's
the history.
Part of
here.
Our history.
All of our founding fathers made great efforts to develop viticulture in their property areas. All of them failed because of the lack of technology that we've talked about. But the popular wine during the period of Washington, Jefferson, Madison, and all of our founding fathers was the Madeira wine. The reason the Madeira wine became popular was that even though it came from the small island of Madeira off Portugal, it was a high alcohol fortified wine and could travel across the oceans because there was no guarantee of an airtight container in those mm-hmm. days yeah. and you wouldn't end up with vinegar on the other side of the ocean. So Madeira was it, and you've seen there on the label the rainwater, it's titled Rainwater, and that's because that in the early days in Portugal, the barrels, again, were not airtight, and so if it rained on the dock before the British ships could pick it up, there'd be a little leakage of rainwater, and by the time it got to the colonies, they thought it was a nice, mellow type of wine. It was the favorite wine of George Washington. He would have a couple of glasses every night. It was the favorite wine of Thomas Jefferson. So, again, it was made of several grapes on the island of Madeira. The Tinta Negra Mola was one. The Malvasia was one. We're now producing wine from the Malvasia. Again, Barbersville is producing a dessert wine from the Malvasia grape. So this was really a dominant wine through much of our history. And so it's still today, still comes from Portugal. And there's only two brands that carry the rainwater label uh-huh. on it.
Well, that is one of my favorite things to cook with. There is yeah. nothing like mushroom soup with a nice, good splash of Madeira, rainwater Madeira. It's fabulous. And I was lucky enough to actually go to Madeira.
Ah, very good.
And to visit a number of places and taste some really old. I mean, we went back to, I think, about 18, gosh.
Did you go to the
I think we went to 1837 with the tasting.
Did you go to the northern part of the island? It's a beautiful island, isn't it?
Beautiful island.
Did you go up to the gardens?
Yes.
Above Funchal?
Yes. Went into the garden, went straight up. Went up really, really high to some point that's supposed to be the highest lookout point in, I don't know, all of...
The island.
on the island.
No, not on the island. In like this huge geographic area. I don't know if it's... Okay. I'm not sure. I have to go check my notes. But it was really high. Really, really high. But it was a very interesting place. And we stayed in this wonderful hotel, really big hotel. And they had lots of different places to put yourself in water, from inside swimming pools and hot tubs to outside pools. And then you could walk down, you could walk out the dock and walk down into the Atlantic. And it was, it was roped off so that there was this part where these guys were floating and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I walked down there. I was like, okay, this looks pretty safe. The pull of the tide was so remarkably strong. I had no idea. I didn't go in. Just standing on the steps when the tide would come in and then pull you out, it was...
Went back up to the veranda and had a glass of Madeira.
Exactly. Right. Went and got in the hot tub.
Well, on the island, the upper reaches, the higher elevations are where you get the drier Madeira, the Sergio, and the Malmsey, which are the sweeter, are down closer to the sea level. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we went up through, and at one point as you're traveling up, and this doesn't take very long time, you go through the banana belt. And that's the other crop is bananas, and it grows just in this swath that sort of sits on the island like this crown. Really interesting place. One of the more interesting airports. definitely challenging.
For the pilots,
the pilot needs to be extremely precise, both landing and taking off. Okay, I have to try this.
Well, Osel, it was that's what was used to toast the Declaration of Independence in Philadelphia. Madeira wine.
I had no idea about any of this. This is just fascinating. So let's say people, and I should say people who listen to Mouthful, when we broadcast, as we're broadcasting right now, it's local, it's Sonoma County, but people can listen around the world online. But then also this goes out as a podcast through iTunes, NPR, and KRCB. So anyone, anywhere... can listen about this. So let's tell people how to get your wines.
Well, basically, the web makes it marvelous and easy.
Okay.
You can use a couple different web searches for each state, and usually it's like virginiawines.com or something like that.
Uh-huh.
You'll find different wineries and then link yourself into individual wineries, and many wineries will ship.
Okay.
California is a very good recipient state. As far as I know, it doesn't require any laws or anything to have wine shipped to the individual. So basically... order through the wineries, find the wineries, and check online and go forward that way.
Okay, and then for your organization, Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association, the website is non-intuitive at this point because you've changed your name.
Yes.
VWGA.org.
Yes.
I can't reach over there. Do you have a full listing of all your members?
Members are there.
We have the board members up there.
Oh, you have the board members.
We have the board
okay.
members there. But you'll find if on the wines, we do list the award-winning wines on that site. So if you want some kind of guideline as to which, you know, to focus on, you can take a look at the site and take a look at the award-winning wines for the competition.
And where does go ahead.
And then link into the individual winery to order.
Okay. And where does the competition take place?
In Virginia.
In Central Virginia.
In July.
In July?
Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things we do with our competition, too, the awards, the best of categories and the best of show awards are presented on Capitol Hill. And we have under the auspices of the U.S. Wine Caucus.
Uh-huh.
So we do have a room there. And we invite all the wineries to come down. And we also invite their congressional members to present the awards to them.
Oh, really? Oh,
and
so
that's sort
that's
of a
nice.
Unique treat to us or for our organization.
And then who do you invite as judges? Do you have local judges, or do you get people involved in wine throughout the country?
Throughout the country. We did when we first started off, we did get people like Tracy Dutton from California out there, but we're kind of concentrating for the East Coast.
Just logistics. But we do have a sampling of judges from California on time frame being and all up and down the East Coast.
Uh-huh.
All the judges are listed on the website.
Oh, the judges are listed as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So you can get a lot of information from VWGA. We've got a few more minutes, so we don't have to say goodbye quite yet.
Okay.
What do you see happening in the next? What's on the horizon?
Well, hopefully with the economy, it gets back and people can buy and drink more wine. Right now, there's a little slowdown that way, but I think the wineries are ready and growing more grapes and trying to produce different varietals and trying different blends and styles. We're still looking for that niche of where some places fit. We're trying a lot of different things, and maybe eventually we may narrow down to a couple that are known specifically for an area. But I think variety is also the nice spice of life that will still continue. Well, a lot of different varieties. Mm-hmm.
And one thing we didn't talk at all is what sort of price ranges are we talking about for these wines?
They range anything from, you know, $10. The average is, you know, $10, $20, but you get some of the premium wines go up mm-hmm. to $50 or so.
Okay.
But I think they're quite reasonable for, uh-huh. For the quality you're getting.
Uh-huh. And you're going to be staying. Gosh, where's my brain? Gordon, you're staying in Sonoma County for a couple weeks.
Yeah, annually. We've been coming out for about 15 years.
Uh-huh. And you said you're from here.
Well, originally, I'm born in San Diego. My wife is born in San Francisco. So it's always a pleasure to come back out to California. But we're ex-Foreign Service people, so it was always uh-huh. retirement or return to Washington, D.C., and now that we have our grandchildren there, we've got an anchor over there.
Sure, of course, of course. So but what are you going to be doing while you're here?
Well, we'll be visiting to our old contacts, and mm-hmm. we've just had a nice luncheon today with several leading members of the California wine industry here, mm-hmm. Michaela Rodino and her husband from mm-hmm. Saint-Supery, and Michael and Jackie Martini from Martini mm-hmm. Winery, and Pete Downs, who represents Kendall Jackson. And mm-hmm. so it's just keeping contact with those that are leaders in the community out here of the industry, and again, always bringing out wines to remind them that we are producing wines on mm-hmm. the East Coast. So this has been going on for a long time. This year was a little different because we did bring out winning wines of the East Coast. So the best of the East was coming to the West.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much for coming out, and thank you for fitting Mouthful into the schedule. It's really
thank you for having us.
Nice
thank you for having us.
And I also have to say thanks to Ann Vercelli for setting this up. Thank you, Annie. It was just great. So let me introduce my guests again so we can say goodbye. Mm-hmm. Carl Bradhorst, president of the Atlantic Seaboard Wine Association. First vice president is David Barber, and president emeritus Gordon Amirci. So thanks very much to all of you. Good luck
thank
next
you,
time
you're
here.
Thank you for having us,
come
Michelle.
See us again.
And we'll
come,
be back.
Come
visit us on the East and try some wines.
And thanks very much to you, too, for listening. Now, if you can take a minute, go to krcb.org, become a member, renew your membership, make a special gift. This is the Say Yes to KRCB Spring Membership Drive. There are always all kinds of thank you presents, all kinds of little things. And if you want Mouthful's traditional bag of cookbooks, the Baker's Dozen, that's 13, you can just send an email and I will set that up for you. We will always do that whenever there's a spring membership drive. So there you go. I will see you here next week for another tasty episode of Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. In the meantime, have a great week and take care of each other.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Listen to